Hi,
this is Take Charge Your Health with Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist, clinician assistant, and Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Listen, learn, and I hope you enjoy the show. Bye.
Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health with Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant, and my co-host, Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Every week, we present you with new and creative ways to help you make sense of health information. With years of clinical experience between us and research into traditional and cutting-edge technologies, we give you practical information to help you take charge of your health. Welcome back. Welcome back. Here we are again with another special interview. Hopefully what we're going to do by the end of this show, after I get through introducing my co-host,
Carol Peterson.
Welcome, Carol. I just about went into the show without introducing you. We are going to have a very interesting show, a show that I believe you will appreciate, but I really think that you should get out a paper and pencil. The information is going to be flowing fast and furiously, and it's important information that will help you be healthier, that'll help your family be healthier. This is quite special. So we have here Dr. Chris Shade. Carol, could you introduce him to the audience, please?
Yes, I've known Chris. May I call you Chris?
Oh, yes.
Rather, Dr. Shade. Okay. I've known you for a number of...
Dr. Buddy.
Great.
Dr. So, Evil.
Also.
Chris has a PhD. He studied environmental sciences and toxicities. He went on to...
Environmental chemistry, yeah.
Quicksilver Scientific, and he developed a special test for evaluating mercury toxicity. He's developed numerous products, and he's always up to something else with using natural detox methods for mercury and other environmental problems. It's a pleasure to have you here, Chris, to enlighten us. Would like to hear a little bit about your detox processes and the thought behind some of the things you've developed. You also have many product suggestions or ideas in the herbal medicine, nutritional medicine arena with how to keep yourself healthy and how to get healthy if you're not. Where should we start, Chris? It's hard to say.
I'm real happy to be here with you, Carol and Corinne. Yeah, kind of stuff I'd like to cover. I know Corinne wanted to cover, shall we call it, authentic detoxification, really balanced detoxification. And at its root is AMPK activation, which is thought of more formally as a cardiometabolic intervention. But I want to get together into people's minds the overlap between those two and their intense amount of interweaving with the immune system, that toxins deplete the immune system and detoxifying removes a lot of the challenges to the immune system. But for the most responsive immune system, you need a lot of AMPK activation. And AMPK is that thing that's activated when we carb restrict or keto diet or fast. There's also a lot of nutraceuticals that amplify that. So we can talk about how it fits. We could talk first about how detoxification should work and the pathways from the cell to the liver to the GI and how that's all supposed to be lined up. And then how that proper directionality, I call it, taking from the blood to the liver into the bile, how that's really anchored by AMPK, and then how AMPK doesn't just help us lose weight and be more metabolically fit, but it's a huge part of our innate immune system. And both of those feed into mitochondrial health. And without mitochondrial health, without the energy to drive into your immune system, your immune system has a lot of different programs it can play. It can play out like a full-fledged war and, you know, bombers and fighters and boats and Marines and CIA on the ground. They can just have it all going on. Or it's more like, well, I'll make you a cup of coffee and bring a biscuit. Maybe I'll plead for a leniency here from the virus. So, you know, there's a lot of different levels at which you can mount an attack, and they're all energy dependent. So here you have this thing where there's detoxification, there's metabolic fitness, and there's mitochondria all woven together to create vitality in the body and vitality in the immune system. And so hopefully we can string that all together.
Well, I see in my office, and that would be terrific. I see in my office people who come in and they're attempting to detox. And what I see very often are frail people who do not look very healthy, who are pale. This is after detoxing, and they're attempting to make themselves healthier, and the end result is they're toxifying themselves twice or three times over. So I would like to put together, and I would like to understand from you, a focused detox that would avoid this and give people direction so that in all the work they're doing, they're becoming healthier.
Yes, because they're doing a lot of work.
They're doing a lot of work. And they just don't have the correct understanding or direction. The first thing that I see they do when they do a detox, they get off all proteins. But we know enzymes are protein, and the ability to detox is based on our enzymes. So here you have done is you've reduced or blocked your ability to respond to the detox. So you wanted
to make glutathione and
exactly.
No wonder they struggled.
Yeah, and so I think what we have to establish is what is the right things like. How does detoxification work in the body? How do you support that? How do you make that happen?
Exactly.
That's one thing, is getting the proper directionality to detox. But the other is, what's your energy status when you go in there? Every one of these reactions, every time you turn a toxin across a membrane to a transporter, it costs you an ATP. Every time you're conjugating a toxin to something like glutathione, it costs you an ATP. So you have to have some energy to do this and some resources to do that. And so those are the two things. You know, first, do we set it up right in the right directions? And then what's our energy status? Are we already flattened out or not? And how are we going to feed ourselves through that? And so we could probably hold those two things separate. First, talk about the directionality it's supposed to go in, and then how do we triage the different patients? And how do we treat them individually according to their their bioenergetic needs, so that their energy increases from this instead of decreases?
So first and foremost, would you be concentrating on the mitochondria? And we've talked about the mitochondria and producing energy. That's the ATP molecule. And there are a lot of environmental toxins that are interfering with that. There's low thyroid hormone interfering with that. All kinds of things can be causing a problem. So should we focus in that area first to make sure that people have the energy to detox?
Yeah, though it is a little bit of not a double-edged sword. It's a little bit of a chicken or the egg thing, because the toxins will deplete the mitochondria. So
exactly.
You have to get them out of there. And so the art is how you balance the two. People very easily get in, because we're white reductionist people, we get into this stepwise thing. I have to do this, then I do this.
So I
got to build up my mitochondria before I detox. But you can't, because they're loaded with toxins. And so the question is, you're going to do both at the same time. And how much weight do you put to each one? So to just start from the end in mind here, in a very low energy person, we're going to be putting a lot of energy into the mitochondria as best we can while doing a lighter detox and slowly ramping that up. Mm-hmm. To someone who comes in with energy but distortion, there we're going to go heavy on the detox and lighter on the mitochondria. And so that's basically the way it's going to go. In the terms of food, the more you can fast during your detox, the better.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand what you just said. The more you what? Could you repeat? The more you fast. Okay, I didn't hear it.
The more you fast during detox, whether it's intermittent fasting or whole day water fasting, the more you fast, the better.
Mm-hmm.
But that means you have to have a lot of, you know, internal energy resources to do that. So the weakened person needs to eat more protein through the day and feed themselves more during their detox. So these are our balances. The weakened person needs more mitochondrial support and more food during the detox. The stronger person needs less of those two.
Well, that's very interesting. So how do you determine, why don't you paint us a picture of how that person presents when you see them?
When they come in, you know, Corinne already kind of painted the picture. They come in pale and frail and low energy. Then you're going to have to detox slow while supporting heavily.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that come in more like maybe ruddy, you know, some red face or, you know, there's energy, but it's distorted and maybe they're easily temperamental or anxious, but they're not just down. Those you want to turn the wheels of the detox harder and faster.
Mm-hmm. Now,
okay. And what kind of process are you talking about? Like, is this a long-term thing, short-term thing, or do you rotate doing things? What's the recommendation here?
Well, it can go anywhere from 1 to 3 months. And why don't we talk about sort of what goes into doing detox and lay out what a proper detox set is.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can, you know, if we want, we can talk about mitochondrial support, and then we can talk about, then you can get an idea of how much you're going to pull each lever.
Okay.
So proper detox is starting at a cellular level, and you have a toxin inside a cell, and say we're talking about a metal like mercury, and it'll be bound to some sulfur group on an enzyme or a protein or a membrane, and it's stuck on there and it's screwing up, say an enzyme, it's screwing up the activity of the enzyme. So you want to get that off of there. And so you need this stuff called glutathione, which is a intracellular antioxidant and detoxification molecule. And that is going to bind on to the mercury. But it doesn't just do it automatically. You need this conjugating enzyme called glutathione S-transferase. And it's going to pull together the metal and the glutathione into a complex. Okay, so now we're inside the cell, and now we have a mercury-glutathione complex. We've gotten it off the enzyme. The enzyme is free to go about its business. And now it's got to get out of the cell. And it cannot diffuse out of the cell. It's got a transporter that pushes it out. It's called an MRP, or multi-drug resistance protein. And it is going to use magnesium and ATP to push this mercury-glutathione complex out of the cell. So there, for writing down your notes, magnesium is a big part of detoxification, and energy is a big part of detoxification. For the glutathione, now we either need to supplement glutathione in the form of a liposomal glutathione or take N-acetylcysteine, NAC, as a precursor, or have whey protein or just a high-protein diet to support the formation of glutathione. The transferase activity is stimulated by sulfur-based compounds like R-lipoic acid, that's my favorite for that.
Mm-hmm.
Also sulforaphane, which is from broccoli sprout extract.
Yeah.
And by a number of polyphenolic antioxidants like green tea extract, pine bark extract. There's an Ayurvedic one called Harataki that I like a lot. And also another compound that is good for NRF2 and good for a number of things is DIM, diindolyl methane, which Carol has talked about a lot for its ability to shift estrogen metabolism towards positive metabolites.
Right.
But it also is an NRF2 upregulator. It is an NRF2 rescuer. And I haven't defined NRF2, but we will in a second. It's a master switch for all your detox. Yeah. It's also helps immune balance. When you become hyperactive to foods, DIM is promoting T regulatory balance in your immune system's cytokine response, which is an immunotolerant approach. You stop being hyperreactive to all the foods and all the things you're exposed to. Mm-hmm. Now, NRF2, what's NRF2? NRF2 is a switch in the cell that gets activated by something like the lipoic acid or the sulforaphane or the polyphenols. And when it gets activated, it goes into the nucleus and it turns up transcription of all of the genes for your chemoprotective system. So transcription means you take the genes and you turn them into proteins. And that would be your enzymes and antioxidants and transporters for the detox system. So all that was at a cellular level to conjugate the toxin, form your glutathione, conjugate it to the toxin, and push it out of the cell.
I call that
the macrocosm.
Okay.
What was that?
Macrocosm. It's the big picture.
That's the micro. Microcosm. The cellular level is the microcosm of detox. Now we're out of the cell, into circulation. Now we're looking at the macrocosm of detox. So the toxin conjugates now are circulating through the blood and lymph, and they have to be filtered out and taken out to excretion. So they have to be taken from the blood into the liver, from the liver into the bile, then into the GI and off to fecal excretion. Or they need to be filtered from the blood into the kidneys and into the urinary stream. And then there is some direct dumping into the GI from the blood and some out through the skin. So the cells have to push out. That's mostly through this NRF2 upregulation, and then the filtration has to happen. And the biggest movement of filtration is through the liver. And this is where detox goes wrong. So somebody hears, oh, lipoic acid, that turns up detox, and yeah, it gets stuff out of the cells into the blood. But then we have to look and make ourselves really small and go into the liver and go and see that every single cell in the liver is fed on one side by blood and drained on the other side by bile. Bile, that green fluid that comes out of the liver and fills up in the gallbladder and then comes out every time you eat and digests your fats for you. Now, when we get to it, it actually does a couple different things for you. But bile and the bile tree, so each cell feeds like a little rootlet of a big root system that is the bile tree. And it comes down to a main trunk called the common bile duct, fills up the gallbladder, and then goes back into the GI. So turns out that the flow of bile out of the liver is the flow of toxins out of the liver. There are active transporters that dump both bile and toxins from the hepatocyte into this bile tree. So the proper movement is from the blood through a door into the liver cell, and then from that liver cell through another door into the bile, and then out into the GI. Now, there are two places where things can go wrong for us. In the liver, once the liver cells get inflamed, that door system shifts, and a door opens up to go from the hepatocyte back into the blood. And when the liver is inflamed, what's that?
I said, oh, dear.
Oh, dear. Because when the liver is inflamed, there's no ability to dump into the bile flow. And instead, the toxins and the bile salts are dumped out of the liver back into the blood.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of dumping it into the GI, it back flushes and dumps all the toxins back into the blood.
So you're double poisoning yourself.
To open up the bioflow. Yeah, you've just mobilized out of the tissues where they may have been
sequestered and been
safely sequestered.
Exactly.
Right.
And now they're active again.
Put them back into circulation.
Exactly.
Right? And if you have an inflammation blocking your liver, that inflammation is also opening up your blood-brain barrier and allowing those toxins to go into your brain. So you may be redepositing toxins into the brain.
Okay.
And then the second place where things can go wrong is when they get into the GI, they can get reabsorbed.
Exactly. Because the bowel isn't moving. Because the bowel isn't moving.
Yes, well.
And the glucuronidase.
Exacerbated by the bowel not moving.
Mm-hmm.
So when it gets to the GI, and we'll go through all this again, so you can ask all the questions along the way. But it went from cell to liver. Say it gets into the bile, it gets down to the small intestine, a number of toxins just naturally reabsorb.
Mm-hmm.
And other toxins only have minor reabsorption, but when the bowel becomes sluggish and doesn't move, then they have plenty of time to resorb.
Mm-hmm.
So you need a combination of binders in the GI, things like clays and charcoals, and you need motility. You need movement of the bowels. So we need our cellular processes, and then they dump into the blood. We need the liver to pull it in, and we need the bile flow working, and then dumped into the GI, and then binders and laxatives to make sure everything moves through.
Okay, so could I interject here? Already when you have somebody with their gallbladder removed, you've got a big problem with the bile delivery. And then
it's not exactly what you think. It is a problem, but it might not be the problem that you think.
Yeah, it can can be managed. That's a manageable problem if people understand.
The gallbladder is a storage and bolus release mechanism.
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
You use the bile as a food digestive.
Mm-hmm.
So when you don't have that, then because the bile is being made all the time and dripping down, filling up a gallbladder, you eat and whoosh, you squirt it all onto the food. So with no gallbladder, you just lack that mechanism. Mechanism of moving the bile flow from the hepatocyte into the bile duct is still intact.
Okay.
However, why did they lose their gallbladder in the first place? Those people are predisposed to a slow bile flow, which allows a gelling of the bile, biliary sludge buildup, and then crystallization of stones, and then they lose their gallbladder. Now, people take gallbladders out way too easy these days.
Yeah, yeah.
But if it's been out, it is at least an indication that you've got at least a sluggish bile flow. And so we have to just be a little bit more careful in how we ramp up detoxification with people who've lost their gallbladder.
Yeah, it's something can be managed.
So how do you stimulate bile? And then it also brings to mind, bile is a steroidal hormone, too, like sex hormone.
And it also stimulates
cholesterol.
And it's immune stimulator also.
Right. So what happens to people who are so avidly trying to knock out their cholesterol with statin drugs?
They're a little screwed.
That's true.
Whoops.
They have a harder time because then they're not making enough bile because they don't have enough cholesterol to make the goddamn bile from. So they're just put at a disadvantage there. It's, more wrong-minded cholesterol knockouts there.
Yes.
But how do we simulate bile is a big question there. And so, fortunately, just good old traditional bitters.
Exactly.
We put it on cocktails now, but, the Swedish bitters, those are just such go-tos. And you look, the turn of the 1800s, the turn of the 1900s, it was like bitters were all people took all the time. And like the Angostura bitters, that recipe was from a general in the army and he had a contingent down in the Caribbean, I think, and that was what he made, and he had his troops take that every day, and everybody stayed perfectly healthy. So why was it the cure-all? It was the cure-all because it moved liver, and it moved bile. And so we use traditional bitters recipes. We focus pretty heavily on gentian, myrrh, dandelion, and solidago in our detox system. In fact, we have this very simple system called push catch liver detox. The push is we're going to mobilize these enzymes, we're going to mobilize the bile, dump the toxins all down to the GI tract, and the catch is we're going to take binders a half hour later. So as we go through looking at what's in that liver formula, it's quote a liver formula, but it works on the cells too. The first ingredient set are traditional bitters.
Mm-hmm. Italians use traditional bitters all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And they've got the artichoke, uncooked artichoke.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness, is that bitter. And dandelion. Oh, yeah. And they mix it with dandelion.
Yep.
And then they've got the gentian. And you'll find a lot of aperitif drinks that you have right before dinner at the beginning are traditional bitters. And they're quite...
Oh, yes. Suze is a gentian one. My wife is French, and so I got married over there, and I spent a lot of time there. Suze is gentian.
Fernet Blanc
is a number of different things. And that one's very heavy in mint. It's more like griping of the stomach. You know, you've overeaten, you need to digest. And then what's the one that's made from artichoke? It's black.
Cynar.
Or Chinar. Cynar. Very bitter, black.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you can make that into cocktails or have it, you know, just with ice. And that's, yeah, there's a lot of, and then the after dinner bitters, the Amaris are very, very popular. So the European culture has a lot of traditional bitters in it.
Now,
maybe not the English culture.
Not so much, not that I'm aware. Well, they've got a little bit, but they're not that strong. You know,
they have English hot mustard. That's their superfood. Isothiocyanate. It's a strong NRF2 upregulator.
Oh, that's pretty good. That's a good start. But there's two things that I really wanted to, because right now, I'm going to give a disclaimer here. None of my patients have gone through this. But there is this post-COVID syndrome that's in the news right now that people have even mild cases of COVID, even mild cases. 6 months later, they're having difficulty breathing. They're so fatigued. They can barely sit up. They can't function. They can't mentally focus.
Yeah.
Their hands and feet are freezing cold. Their taste buds are out. It's a whole complete syndrome. Like I said, when I'm working with patients, I have not seen that syndrome because in the process of getting them better, I'm getting them healthier because I'm working with vitamin C, I'm working with ozone and UVB, and I'm doing IV glutathione and nebulized glutathione. So people are getting well and getting even healthier. But how would we approach these patients who are in this, they're caught in this syndrome that nobody's really giving them direction on how to get out of this? Would we deal with detox?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen some of those. I had one here that works with us that had that. And it's very much like a chronic fatigue type of thing. And I was wondering, there is an immune suppressive aspect of COVID, and I wonder if it's allowing other background infections to come up, you know, the ones that, you know, viruses and biofilms that were in the background, and all of a sudden they come up, because this one had high liver enzymes and crushing fatigue, and we did the push-catch and cat's claw. We have a nano cat's claw. And all the fatigue went away and the enzymes came down, but they haven't come all the way down. We're going to add in some biocidin and microbe manager, which is our nano artemisinin and see if we can push it the rest of the way.
Is she feeling better?
What's that?
You said Biocidin, but you didn't say what it was for our audience.
Yeah. Oh, Biocidin LSF is Biocidin is a microbial balancing antimicrobial formula. It's made by Biobotanical Research, and then we put it into a liposome for them. They have an oil-based one in a capsule that's more for GI dysbiosis, and then the liposome is more systemic. You know, we find for some of these kind of hard-to-pin-down, sort of biofilmy, occult, viral-type syndromes, that a combination of the Biocidin and the cast claw works really well. And now, if we have one called Micro Manager that takes it up at another level even.
Now, cat's claw, I'm sorry, Carol, I didn't hear you.
Oh, with the micromanagement was artemisia, right?
Also.
Yeah, well, there's a bunch of stuff because there's antimicrobials and anti-inflammatories in there. So the microbial side, it's artemisinin, andrographis, berberine, and propolis, and then you have CBD, boswellia, quercetin, and silymarin on a more anti-inflammatory and AMPK activating side.
I always think of...
So that's kind of hitting from a couple different sides.
I always think of cat's claw as more of an anti-inflammatory. Where would you put cat's claw?
People were using it for, like, joint inflammation and anti-inflammatory stuff, but it has a...
And rheumatoid arthritis.
Using it for cancer, and people use... Yeah, exactly. But
chronic
it seems to work. It works really well for Lyme treatments. Epstein-Barr and cytomegalovirus treatments.
Okay. Now,
and actually, I made this product to get myself out of Epstein-Barr and cytomegalovirus. I was crushed. I could only work like 2 hours a day, and that was what fixed me.
Wow.
Okay.
Okay. Isn't it amazing how so much of what we do and what we put forward was developed as a result of working with ourselves, with our families?
Yeah.
We always hear Carol always gives us these amazing protocols, all based on what she's done to help her mother. And it's really quite wonderful.
Yep.
N of one.
Not only my mother, but my mom's doing well at 94.
Mm-hmm. But I'd also like, many of my patients in the audience suffers with autoimmune disease. Now, there's a very strong inflammatory process going on there.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a possibility of a very strong toxicity process there. But again, we're dealing with more frail people. So let's just take a patient. How would we go about and how would we approach this? Or how would someone do this on their own? Or is it possible?
Well, it is. You know, you have to be a little in tune with yourself. But so you take like our system. We have this Pushcat's liver detox, and that has this liver sauce to activate, move everything, and a binder to bind. So however you get there, you're going to have these two aspects. And then you have things you can add on. So what else are you going to add on? So the way that we dose things in time, you'll take the liver sauce, and we do these nanoparticle deliveries. So everything gets into the blood really quick, and you get these peaks in the blood. And everything's into the blood within 20 to 30 minutes. And so 30 minutes after you take that, you're going to take your binder and it's going to go and collect everything that was mobilized and dumped down there. So in that first period where you take your liver sauce, you can take other things. So our basic dosage is a teaspoon of liver sauce and a teaspoon of the binder. Now, what other things are we going to use? So say we have frail but not inflamed people, and we want to get some energy in there. So we're going to do NAD boosters. We have a product called NAD Gold and another one called NAD Platinum. And for the NAD Gold, there's a companion product called Methyl Charge, because NAD, anytime you drive NAD from mitochondria, you have to drive methylation. So without getting too much into that, those are going to be taken they are low energy, we're now, instead of doing a teaspoon, we're going to drop down to a quarter or a half teaspoon. So we're going to drop the dose in half or even further, and we're going to give some NAD precursors at the same time. Sometime during the day, we might be giving CoQ10 or some other mitochondrial formula to bring that energy up too. Now, on the other hand, say we have somebody who's very inflamed and has autoimmune issues. Let's say inflamed and has a sympathetic dominance, meaning they have some anxiousness and they're sort of tense all the time. Now I'm going to use CBD at the same time that I take the liver sauce, because the CBD is going to go and calm the brain down. And we might, you know, dose this, you know, we'll do the whole detox round twice a day, but we might dose CBD three times a day. So CBD is going to bring down inflammation and neurological inflammation and allow the detox more. Now we have someone autoimmune. I would do CBD for sure, because we have to dim back this hyperactive immune system. There is DIM in the liver sauce, but I would give a little bit more DIM as well, because DIM is going to move you away from TH2, TH17 wings of cytokine response into T regulatory dominance, which is more immunotolerant. But then for the deep levels of dealing with the autoimmune, there's always got to be GI work being done. Now, the binder is really good for that, detox is really good for that, but there'll probably be other aspects of working on leaky gut, like bone broth and different gums and marshmallow root, and working on your food tolerances and elements like that. Now, the other thing that we put in, there's a number of things we can add in with the detox, but the other one we'll use a lot is glutathione. And glutathione is driving detoxification, especially metals detoxification. And it is also a big immune balancer as well, as well as working on the telomeres. So it's a longevity thing, too. But for the Hashimoto's patients, they always did very well on glutathione and CBD.
Now, this is what I have been told. I haven't seen the science behind this, though. That when people are heavily toxified, when they have heavy metals in their bodies and cells, and they take the glutathione precursor, which is N-acetylcysteine, NAC, normally when you take that, it goes into the cell and immediately it binds together and becomes glutathione, which then acts as a detoxer. But when people are very heavily toxified, that it can't make that conversion into glutathione. And so you need to take a very bioavailable glutathione. Is that right?
Yes.
Yay.
Yeah, it's the glutathione synthase and the GGT, gamma glutamyl transferase. There's two enzymes responsible for making glutathione, and the very toxic people usually has those enzymes blocked, and that's probably why they're so toxic. There's a little bit of chicken and the egg there. Certainly mold toxins block that, but often something else, you know, could be an infection or something blocking it. But yeah, they're not good at converting that into glutathione, so they need that crutching of a direct glutathione, and it's got to be a liposomal glutathione, and the acetyl glutathione seem to work fairly well as well, but you know, we make a liposomal glutathione, but it's got to be a good liposomal glutathione. I've seen liposomal glutathiones that I've measured as low as 2% of label claim. You know, people don't necessarily know the chemistry of how to deal with their glutathione, and it breaks down, and so it's got to be a good quality liposomal glutathione.
Now, you also spoke about binders. So 25 years ago, 30 years ago, one of my favorite binders was charcoal. How do you relate to that? And also, we also used a lot of what they call bismuth. We used bismuth, but then there was another one. I'm forgetting it. It was in Sony 777. This formula that we used to use. It was another form of clay.
It was in Yeah, well, there'll be zeolites and bentonites, and there's a number of different kinds of clay out there. I'm not sure about the bismuth. That didn't ring a bell to me.
Okay.
But the most common binders in the world forever have been charcoal and clay. Now, in our ultra binder, which is a cocktail of binders, we have charcoal, we have clay in the form of zeolite, we have chitosan, which is derived from shellfish, but is not, it's anallergic, it's been deacetylated, so it doesn't have any allergic properties, but it has a similar binding to welchol and cholestyramine. So we have those three, and then we have IMD, which is something that we make, which are very high surface area silica gel, and they have sulfhydryl groups on them. So it's like putting a chelator on this little particle, and it goes through and it binds all the metals. And then we put some gums in there for the health of the GI system, acacia gum, and, we put acacia gum and aloe. So a combination of the different binders is best, because each of them has their what's called a specificity. So if it has high specificity for a toxin, then a small amount of binder can bind a lot of toxin. If it has low specificity, then you need a lot of binder to get a little bit of toxin.
That's interesting.
And so there's so many different toxins out there, you need a lot of different kind of binders. But the thing that has the broadest range of specificities, the broadest range of toxins, is probably charcoal.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's easy. People don't have trouble taking that at all.
Yeah.
No.
Uh-huh.
I like your approach of trying to hit all the bases in one protocol.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yep.
Now, can I ask another question? We always hear about chlorella all the time, and one of the things that the folklore has it, and some science has it, that there was lots of mercury in the dyes in India on their plates and on their cooking utensils, but they would use so much chlorella, I mean just handfuls of it, on all their food that they were not absorbing the mercury out of that was coming with their food supply. Now, I don't know if that's true.
I have never seen an Indian eat chlorella. Have you ever seen an Indian person eat chlorella? Where the hell did that come from?
Oh, you know what? I'm thinking...
Chlorella came out of Japan.
No. I'm thinking of... what is it? Not chlorella. I'm thinking of... cilantro. I'm sorry. Use the wrong
cilantro,
word. Cilantro.
Yeah,
fistfuls of cilantro.
But that was supposed to be in like the Klinghart world, like the naturopathic metal detox of cilantro and chlorella. And cilantro was supposed to be a mobilizer that moved it out of the tissues into the blood, and chlorella was your binder. And chlorella, I have validated, does have very high affinity binding sites for mercury and other heavy metals. Not a lot, like you have to take, handfuls of chlorella for
mm-hmm,
that.
Mm-hmm.
But it does have that binding capacity. So those are the ways that those are used. And Klinghart and Omura, the Japanese muscle tester, really pushed those things. We never used cilantro in our systems because nobody ever knew what the active compound was in there, so you couldn't standardize for it, you couldn't test for it, you
mm-hmm.
didn't know, it was like, well, it's got to be freshly extracted, it can't be dried, and then it's got to be in this ethanol extract, but you can't measure anything, whereas, and there's no literature on what the heck it is and how to use it and what it does, and so we used only things that we had literature on, so we didn't use the cilantro, and it's not that I don't believe it, but it's just so poorly understood.
Mm-hmm.
But then coriander, which is the ground seeds for cilantro, does not have this problem. And that's mostly what they use in Indian cooking. But they do use fresh cilantro as well. I think you see the fresh cilantro a little bit more in the Mexican cooking.
Mm-hmm. Now, lipoic acid, how does that fit into this whole overall picture?
So lipoic acid is an NRF2 upregulator. So that's that switch in the cells that turns up all, it'll make more of the transferase, make more glutathione, more transporters. And lipoic acid is really good at upregulating that. And so that's how we use that. And we want to make sure that when we do that, that we also have the bioflow moving and that we have the binders on board. And when you, if you don't have all that liver program going and the binders when you do the lipoic acid, you just stir the pot up. And there was a lot of people, you know, kind of well-publicized bad reactions of using lipoic acid improperly. But, you know, one of the things that really anchors this movement of the bile out of the liver and that proper directionality of the liver is the AMPK activation. And AMPK activation, like I said, AMPK is what is activated when you're fasting or if you go on carb restriction, like a keto diet. Mm-hmm. And it is a sensor that you've run out of ATP, and it reaches into your cellular stores, and it mobilizes glycogen, so you can use glycogen for energy. It mobilizes fat to be turned into ketones, and the ketones be used for energy. And it increases your carbohydrate utilization, increases glucose transporters. And it also turns up autophagy, which is going in to your organs and removing damaged cells or removing parts of cells like damaged mitochondria. So it's this going inward and recycling old materials and clearing them out of the way. And a lot of the old materials, and this includes misfolded proteins and cellular debris, a lot of those are pro-inflammatory. And so it's getting rid of a lot of inflammatory detritus inside the body. And it is making you new mitochondria and new organelles. And it is also locking in that proper directionality in the liver. And it's stimulating mitochondrial biogenesis, the formation of new mitochondria. And in fact, when we had built this PushCats liver detox system, and there was a guy in Texas that did a study on fatty liver, and he got 82% resolution of fatty liver in just 1 to 2 months using this.
Wow.
And AMPK, at first he attempted to say, it's crazy fast.
Is that AMPK by itself or with this PushCats detox?
No, he was just using the PushCats detox. And okay. I had designed it without thinking about what AMPK was.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until we made our keto products that we started looking at AMPK. But once I saw all this, you know, at first you want to think, well, you get rid of the toxins and then, you know, and then all the fatty liver goes away. It's actually half of the ingredients in there were really strong AMPK activators. So a lot of the things that are that you think of as NRF2 activators also have life as an AMPK activator. And when AMPK is hyperactivated, NRF2 gets much more strength to it. It's easier, much easier to trigger NRF2. And so these systems that are mixtures of detox and metabolic stimulants give you the best results. And if the patient can do intermittent fasting and not eat in the morning, because that's when AMPK is most, it's already somewhat activated, and then you mm-hmm. come in with these nutraceuticals that activate it, and it can go really, really, it can go up really high, and you can get the best and fastest detox. That's why I said it's good if they can fast a little. And most people can intermittent fast, you know, just like not eat breakfast and, you know, mm-hmm. wait for lunch until 1 o'clock and do mm-hmm. their round of detox in there. And then they have to come in with nutritionally dense food in the second part of the day, and they can do another round of detox. But that blending those two together gets the most results. And then you'll see things like your insulin resistance going down, your blood sugar control going up, plaques and fatty deposits going away. And then you're really getting the most out of rehabbing the system, and you're bringing the energy of the system up because you're teaching the body to use more different kinds of energy sources more efficiently.
Well, that sounds
wow,
quite beautiful. So now, as they say, time flies when you're having fun. And guess what? Our audience can never, never accuse us of talking down to them. Uh-huh. We are talking up to them.
If you want to do that.
Pardon?
Yeah.
So I would love
for that. I'm always going to talk up.
So I would love, we got a couple minutes left, about 4 minutes left. Do we have a KISS, keep it simple, stupid, protocol that that we can give out, just a gentle protocol that can get people started? We're going into a sluggish time of year. First of all, we're all confined to a large degree and more getting more so. That's number one. Number two, less light and less energy, and three, richer foods. So what can we do? Do you have any thoughts?
All right. Well, yes.
Yay.
And it's like levels of doing this, you know. So
okay.
One, intermittent fast. Throw away breakfast and just don't do it. You can have tea, coffee, whatever. Just don't take calories in then. The difference is you can take some fat, so things like a bulletproof coffee. You just don't want to take proteins or carbs in the morning when you're doing your intermittent fasting. And then if you can lay some other things onto that, if you take find yourselves a good bitters formula, and if you just want to hold it at that for detoxing, you do that 3 times a day. You can do it, you know, before your meals, and that will help you move and detoxify. Now, if you want to add more of a cycle of detox, then you want to take bitters and maybe low doses of lipoic acid, and only take the lipoic acid if you're going to take it with bitters and binder after, and we're going to talk about a binder. So bitters, maybe some small lipoic acid, maybe a polyphenolic antioxidant like green tea extract or quercetin. Sometimes you can get blend of these things. So take that all together, and then 45 minutes later, you can take, say, 4 charcoal tablets and, you know, 5 to 10 chlorella tablets, and that'll be your binder. Now, you can go to Quicksilver Scientific, you get our Push Catch Liver Detox, and it's all laid out for you. But if you just want to work from, you know, what you have around, that would be a nice little detox cycle. And it would be best to do that in your intermittent fasting period in the morning. And then continue to take the bitters with your other meals, especially when you're eating the heavy meals. And, you know, if you're going to be, if you're a drinker and you like cocktails and wine, start looking around for some of these bitter cocktails like the Sinar or Campari
or
Sins. I don't think I've seen here.
Amara.
But there's a number of them.
Mm-hmm.
The Amaros, all of those are really good. In fact, you know what's really good is a good sweet vermouth with a little bit of orange bitters in it, like Peixos bitters or Creole bitters, on ice as an aperitif. We don't think about what vermouth is, but it's a wine that's been steeped in bitter herbs. And so all of those are very helpful. And those are little ways to just add in to getting bioflow moving, eating less, especially to compensate for the rich food that you are eating, and even putting in a cycle of detox.
This has been just a wonderful hour. I really don't want it to end. I want to thank you so much for being here with us. It was, I've got pages of notes in front of me. So even I'm learning. Not even I'm learning, and I know those listening are also learning. So thank you so much. And Do you have a website?
It's been a pleasure, Corinne.
Yeah, it's really been fun.
It's quicksilverscientific.com. That's all one word, Quicksilver Scientific. Quicksilver is the old European word for mercury, and we were a mercury testing and detox specialty company originally, and that's why it's Quicksilver Scientific. And there's a lot of educational material either there or on our YouTube page. There's a Quicksilver Scientific YouTube page where there's a lot of my webinars, a lot of interviews with me. You'll see me all over YouTube talking about these different concepts. You get yourself a push catch, and there's instructions on there and how to go light, maybe a little glutathione with that. But you can find the bitters there, and you can have that throughout your day as just a simple way in.
Thank you so much, Carol.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks for sharing this time with us. It's been amazing.
Certainly has.
Excellent.
So happy to have you, and we're so happy to learn and share this information with our audience.
So,
okay, take care.
You too, and we'll be back next week with more information. Again, we'll be talking up to you.
Okay.
Be ready to learn. So, and Carol, thank you. Every time we're together, I learn.
And me too.
And we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So, we'll be back next week. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Remember, this information is not an attempt to diagnose or a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share with you up with your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. You can hear this program in its entirety on my Facebook, Corinne Fornari, RPA, CCN, or on Take Charge of Your Health Facebook page, Take Charge of Your Health. My website is fornarihealth.com, and my office number is 212-219-0700. That's 212-219-0700. And I know many of you noticed that beautiful music, a big change. My brother's group wrote it for me. Left Hook from Redding, California. Their website is Redding Left Hook. Really special. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.